Okay, so let's get started. Chakra 7. If anybody has any question on that, go ahead and write it in, or raise your hand. And if we don't have anything, I am going to get started on Chakra 7. Okay. So Chakra 7 is the crown. It is the top dog in the chakras as far as vibration goes. It represents the channel through which you become consciously aware of your soul and of your physical life purpose and life purpose and the life purpose level of awareness. But it's also where you connect, and most importantly, it's where you connect to infinite possibility. It's where when I ask you, how's your day going and what are you doing today? And you say things like, could be anything. It's just amazing. And my life is so incredible. It's, you know, something new happens every day. Just incredible. You know, so that idea of infinite possibility is an open seventh chakra. Whenever you're faced with a situation, a hard situation, and you notice that you look at any situation and say, well, you know, there's lots of options here. You have an open seventh chakra. When you look at a situation and you say, there's only two options. It's just this or it's that. You know, I can't do anything. I'm stuck. That's a closed seventh chakra. And it's important to understand about the seventh chakra that it will, as we've talked about as we've sort of worked our way through all of the lower chakras, the seventh chakra is really the mechanism for all of those openings we've done sort of a little mini chakra series here over the summer, and we talk about each one, and as you do work in one chakra, it bumps you up to the next one, and more energy comes up, and there's a little freedom, a little awareness, a little consciousness in each one, builds up, comes up to the seventh chakra. And in the seventh chakra ultimately gives meaning to the work you've done in the lower chakras. And when it opens, you get a wider vista. It's like going up, it's like climbing a mountain. You're down at the bottom of the mountain, down on the street, and, you know, the trees are over your head and you really can't see much, but it's less like, you know, you're surrounded by forest. And you start going up the mountain a little bit, and as you go up the mountain, you get a little wider vista and you realize, oh, hey, there's a pond right here. You know, I never knew that. I didn't know there was a pond on the other side of those trees. And each time you go up further, you have a broader awareness of what you are embedded within. And as you get up to the top of the mountain, as you get up to the seventh chakra, you become aware of how all of your energies work and how those transformations that went along the way, what they meant. So the seventh chakra ultimately brings meaning to what's going on in the lower chakras. The problem is that our vows often have already created meaning for everything that happens. It's like, this is good or this is bad. I do that and I'm good, and I do this and I'm bad. And I always do this and I never do that. And because that would be a bad person and this would be a good person. And so whenever you have a vow, just picture that, let's say that seventh chakra is open, you know, let's say it's open 6 or 10 inches, you know, wide. Let's say it's a big wide open chakra. Now, every vow that you have in one of the lower chakras will shrink it a little bit, just like, a millimeter or a half, or, you know, like maybe a 16th of an inch. And then you have another vow, and it just closes a little bit more. Because each time you have a vow, each time I say, I'll always be good and I'll never be bad, that means I'm negating part of my possibility, part of my infinite quality, which would mean if I'm always going to be good, that's great. But the reality is that I'm not always good, and I can't always be good to be a human being. I'm not a machine. And so when I have a vow, every time you have a vow, you negate half of that quality within you. And whenever you negate something, that means you're limiting yourself by that vow, and that will close the seventh chakra. So it closes a little bit more. And when you have 20 or 30 or 50 pretty decent vows in there, and then once you have the add-on vows, I have a vow that that I always, you know, I always need to be good. And then I'll have a vow to judge other people who aren't good. That's an add-on vow to that one. And then those vows, those being good vows, will start carrying over to all teachers need to be good, all, you know, blah, blah, blah. And because of that one vow and belief system, that hardwired belief system, you will have developed a whole paradigm of why people need to be good and why bad people are bad and why you should never be that and all of that. And in doing that, you close the seventh chakra. So the seventh chakra actually closes from the vows that we have. You know, the most common chakra configuration that I see in people is a very, very active sixth chakra that feels like it's totally in charge of everything and has all the right ideas, because the sixth chakra remembers all the vows and sort of knee-jerk sort of like reacts to the world through those vows and knows those vows to be absolute God's truth and worships those vows. But the seventh chakra is actually mostly closed. And so the seventh chakra being closed to, you know, because of those, the sixth chakra then is in charge of sort of railroading and judging and holding the rule keeper over all of the other chakras and how they need to behave and how they have to hold their energy. And so when the seventh chakra is closed, it's very difficult for you to sort of get enough consciousness to break a mental pattern. And so what happens when you have a life full of very strong vows is you have a life that repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats patterns that don't evolve. They don't become conscious. They don't really become conscious. They're just the right thing to do. I always do this, or I never do that. And so when the seventh chakra comes into play, the seventh chakra gives you the opportunity to awaken, to become more conscious of the process, and including what we're doing right now, which is we're talking about vows, and we're talking about the types of things that you may have chosen in your life and some big ones that may really be impacting you. And when you become conscious of something, you start taking away its power. A vow that, you know, the vow to always be good may not be something you even think about. But boy, when someone's bad and you have a vicious judgment of them, or you are somehow bad or are caught being bad when you didn't think you were going to get caught being bad, and you have a vicious judgment of yourself, then you can really see, wow, this is not living my life. This is really draining my energy rather than allowing me to make choices in my life in a healthy way. So basically, the way the chakras work, and we're sort of working through them here over the summer teleclasses, you do a little work in the first chakra and you become aware, gee, I got this feeling, and there's something, you know, the first chakra is like, wow, there's something wrong. My foot's turning out the wrong way, or my hand's not closing all the way. Something physical you're aware of. And then in the second, you know, chakra, you realize, oh, and it hurts and it's hot and it's got, you know, I'm feeling that there's some sort of, you know, pain in there. And, you know, in the third chakra, you may even realize, oh, wow, I've been doing things with my hand. I've been taking action that might be triggering this to do this. And this sort of like the sense of self, it's like, oh, that pain makes me not feel so good about myself. I don't like, you know, I like having pain. I don't like being that person that has pain in my hand. And then you realize, you know, come up to the fourth chakra, and it's at the relationship at level. And you realize, oh, wow, you know, when I have this pain in my hand, I don't reach out and shake hands with people anymore. I don't reach out and touch anymore. I'm not, you know, so it's like, wow, what's going on here? And, you know, and then you get up to the fifth chakra, and you may even, or you may go see a doctor at the fourth chakra and say, oh, I'm in a relationship. This is hurting me. And then at the fifth chakra, you may talk to people and say, wow, my hand really hurts. I don't know, you know, what's going on here. But I'm going to, let's, you know, has anybody else got this thing going on with their hand? And then at the sixth chakra level, you see the bigger picture of how sort of like what you've been doing, you know, in your life, which is, you know, maybe you've been doing a whole bunch of gardening, you know, and you sort of take in that bigger picture and you go, oh, you know, I've added in this one other thing that really uses my hand a lot. And then at that moment, the sixth chakra sort of works through sort of this process, and it stops being something that you're trying to get rid of, and you realize, oh my God, and the seventh chakra opens up, and the seventh chakra says, oh, you know, I have been overusing my hand, you know, gardening. And that's what it is. And there's an awareness, there's a, sort of, it brings meaning to all of those lower level chakra investigations, which is what the chakras are constantly doing. They're investigating your life. They're sort of, they're trying to bring a consciousness to your life. And I know that a hurt hand is just a very simple element. It could be, you know, it could be abandonment. It could be anything that you've dealt with in your life. But the hand is very easy. And then once you, you know, once the seventh chakra opens to that realization, and the realization comes and the seventh chakra opens and you say, oh my God, that's what it is. I've been doing too much of this type of troweling or gardening or something, and that's what's causing my hand to be sore. And so now it comes down to the sixth chakra, and you know, so the seventh chakra opens up, and then what happens is that when the seventh chakra opens, it doesn't open to sort of like, oh, great, I got a great idea. It actually now brings that brilliance, that awareness down into each of the chakras. So then at that moment, the sixth chakra sees, oh, so this is how it works. I may hire someone to help me dig in all these things rather than do it all myself. You know, I don't have to do that. At the fifth chakra, you go and you ask, you go and talk to a couple of people that will be supporting you to do your gardening. You know, at the fifth level, you actually hire somebody in relationship to come and help you do the gardening so you don't have to hurt your hand. At the third level, you see yourself as a person who doesn't always do their own gardening. They don't, you know, you see yourself as a person who is willing to hire someone rather than be hurt. At the second chakra, you know, you have to pay for it, but you also get the pleasure of not having the pain anymore. And at the first chakra, you know, you realize that your hand's getting better. And your physical and physically you have resolved this pain issue in your body. And basically, in a very simple way, anything that is out of balance in your life is a pain. And whether it be in a relationship or, you know, whatever it is in your life that's out of balance creates some level of pain in your life. Your chakras work it through, and that is the chakra system. And you can't skip any of those and have resolution. And so that's why it's really important that you have a conscious ability to move up and down through the chakras and to allow that awareness. But it's very important that you understand that once you've worked through the chakras and the seventh chakra opens up, the seventh chakra isn't an escape hatch. Often, you know, it's looked at as the spiritual escape hatch, which is sort of beam me up, Scotty. There's no intelligent life down here on planet Earth. But it's not actually designed for that. It's designed to keep you here and keep you consciously growing and transforming. So that's the seventh chakra, and it brings infinite possibility to your body, infinite possibility to your feelings in the second chakra, infinite possibility to who you can be in the third chakra, infinite possibility in your relationships right now, in your body right now, in your sense of self right now. When the seventh chakra is open, there's no limitation. You have this, I mean, you wouldn't go and just jump off a building and try to fly when you're not a bird, but within the context of the body and the structure and the energy you have, you know, infinite possibility, that the mind opens up and says, oh, I have all these opportunities. I can speak with, you know, I can ask for things in an infinite number of ways. I can love in an infinite number of ways in my relationships, in my heart. You know, I can see the world instead of always seeing it in the same way. Oh, yeah, it's just the way the world is. I then have, you know, I have the opportunity to perceive the world in a, you know, with infinite possibility. And so you really need the seventh chakra to do the work that we're doing here. And so that's why I spend, you know, an inordinate amount of time, you know, making sure that you are challenging these vows, because I can't get your seventh chakra to open up if you can't change some of those hardwired belief systems, you know, and vows that keep you stuck or keep you seeing the world in a finite way. And so in class, I spend a lot of time, and those of you that are in the second and third year know that I spend a lot of time sort of trying to upset the apple cart a little bit and challenge the way you think and giving you opportunities to take a new look at an old idea, an old way of doing things, which is very freeing. And ultimately, the seventh chakra, when it's open, it frees you to live your life, to live totally alive in each moment and excited about the way things are and see the world as a mystery rather than having it all figured out. I know how it is. I know it. I know the way it is. I've got it all figured out. And, you know, which makes the world very stale. Seventh chakra makes the world incredibly exciting. Yeah, we want to get out of automatic. And let me finish up here on the seventh. Melinda, were there any questions on the seventh?
I have no hands up and I have no Q&A.
Okay. Totally fine. And I'm still going to, do a couple more things on the seventh chakra. I'm just looking at my notes here. One of the neat things about the seventh chakra is that it's infinite possibility. And one of the things that we're very aware of in the heart is that the heart is the primary healing tool. And as a primary healing tool, it heals primarily through forgiveness and unconditional love. Now, if you have a vow to never be like my mother, who was, whatever, right? If your mother was, lazy or whatever, you have that vow in your system. Any vow you have is basically an unforgiving act. It is negating a quality of you that, I would never be lazy. That's a terrible thing, but I'm incredibly forgiving. And so it's really important to understand that to be unconditionally loving, you have to be open to all possibility. And it's a very difficult maneuver because people don't want to let go of their vows. They don't want to let go of their beliefs. They don't want to let go of their anger at their parents. They don't want to let go of these things. And yet they want to become a healer and have a, sort of have this sense of, I know I care about everybody, just not those people. And it's really important to sort of embrace that the heart can't open without the seventh chakra being open. To open the seventh chakra, you have to go into each of the chakras and release them of their conditional type of living, which are the vows. And when the seventh chakra opens, as it opens more and more, then you can become more unconditionally loving, which is the essence of what healing is. And interestingly, real healing is not a matter of loving someone else enough that they get better, but loving yourself enough that you are fearlessly showing them how to live as a fully functioning and alive human being. And so often people do not even have a model for that. And so they see everybody else as the same vow, especially if you grew up in a family where the vow was, we're good people because we lived in, we lived in South Boston or we did, that's the kind of people we are. We're the salt of the earth kind of people. That's what makes us good. And we vow to, we vow to always be that. Well, when you have those kinds of limitations, and you have an opportunity in your life, you may sabotage that opportunity because of that vow. And so that's self-love would be taking the opportunity and not sabotaging yourself and not realizing or recognizing that vow actually sabotages your ability to change your life circumstances. And when you have a client come to you who's got problems or is stuck in their lives or has an illness is always a factor of self rejection at some level. There's some part of me that I've held back on, and when I hold back on myself, that holds back my energy. And when I hold back my energy, my body gets sick. It doesn't like that. It doesn't like not having all of its energy. So when a healer actually just literally stands in the room with someone and demonstrates what it's like to live your life purpose fully energized, or at least a little more energized than the person there, it reminds them that they can hold that energy as well, and it's safe to do that. And so healing work seems like we're doing a lot of chakra work and, there's sort of like vow work, and what could this ever do? Well, until you deal with your vows, until you get that energy back in the chakras, you can't model a healthy energy system, which is ultimately what heals at the deepest level. Techniques do heal at the physical level, but the deepest level of healing has to be done at the heart level, at the love, at the self-acceptance level. And so any work you can do to release vows, release patterns in your life, release negative, any type of negative pattern or addiction in your life will immediately start calling back energy to you, energy back into your system, and awareness. And as you do that, you become more of a transformative element in the world, where other people will follow your lead, will raise their energy to meet yours rather than lower their energy to meet yours. So just it's a nice sort of awareness that's a huge part of what we do in the program. And, especially at the beginning, we're really helping you understand that you need to chisel away at those, and that vows are tricky little critters because they have hardwired themselves into your nervous system, because you made that vow usually at a very early age where, you got your hand slapped or you got ridiculed for stealing a cookie, and you vow, I will never steal. And yet later on in life, when, if I could never steal, personally, I couldn't bring you half the material I bring you. I steal from just about everybody's books and everybody's ideas, and I read and listen to and watch on video, and I take those ideas, and I certainly synthesize them into other things. But I don't always give credit to the people that I steal ideas from. I don't have that vow, don't steal. I feel like, especially if someone makes something public or writes a book, it's just, these are things, and I certainly do give credit to a lot of these people that I take my ideas from and that we integrate into the school. For instance, the profiles alone, Alexander Lowen and Carolyn Mace and Anadea Judith, who have this brilliance in the chakras. But the truth is that someone who really has that hardwired vow will find it very difficult to be creative, because they're not allowed to borrow ideas, even borrow ideas from other people. It's like you have to figure it out on your own. You have to make it good. And so that vow, those types of vows that get hardwired as a child are literally nervous system. And so the first time someone even says, well, I talked about something that wasn't even my idea, they feel guilt and shame, and they have to work through that. And so working through your vows is one of the most powerful ways to call back the energy you need to really make choice in your life. And I'm not suggesting that we all become thieves, but there are ways of stealing, ways of of utilizing energy in the world. And, sneaking a cookie is not a terrible thing. Now, if you sneak 15 cookies at midnight every night, that's, that's not good. But so I'm trying to make a metaphor out of this, and I just want you to sort of understand that we've made some very hardwired vows, and vows are hardwired in the system, and the only way to begin the process of releasing them and gaining back the energy from them is to make them conscious and to recognize that there are patterns in each one. So the seventh chakra vows, typical seventh chakra vows are, I vow not to trust God. He let bad things happen to good people, which is that sort of like the sense that, we're seventh chakra is also our connection to spirit and to an awareness of a higher power. And another one would be, I do not believe that if I ask, I shall receive. It never happened from my parents or me. And so there's like a hardwired sense of limitation in that. I vow to keep praying for a better life for me and those I love. Often we've been taught, if you don't pray, you're not a good Christian, you're not a good Catholic, you're not religious if you aren't praying. But what if that vow should have been pray? It's a lovely thing to do, rather than pray against the way the world is. And so a vow to pray for a better life, or for me or for someone else, is actually a rejection of the life you're living at some basic level. And I'm not saying that so that you can say, well, shouldn't I ever want a better life? Of course, part of having all the chakras and their desire for evolution and growth and health would of course draw you toward things that are good for you and away from things that are bad for you. But to pray that things are always going to get better puts you in the future, puts you out of the present moment where the actual healing needs to happen. I vow to be practical. There is no afterworld. This is all you get. So get what you can. It's going fast. Sort of like limitation thinking. Life is hard. Life is hard work, then you die. That can be said. Life sucks, then you die, or whatever. People have this sort of belief, these things that, life is hard. Or you can go the other way. You say, I vow to know my limitations. It keeps me from being disappointed. So the knowledgeable achievers will be very practical in how they make their vows. Or you can go totally the other way and say, God is everything. You know, God is everything, and everything is good. And, you know, knowing that, that vow, you know, when you watch the news, isn't quite true, you know, and God is everything, but not everything can be, you won't be able to embrace everything in the world. It's just not going to happen. Even if you become enlightened, there's probably some things that you're going to be like, yeah, I still can't accept that. So those are typical seventh chakra vows. Anything around limitation, anytime you say, you know, I vow that any level of limitation in your system, and, you know, especially around, you know, around ideas and bringing newness in into your awareness. So the freedom statements for the seventh chakra are going to open that up. The freedom statements are very, very important. They are your acknowledgement of what your soul would say, would speak through each of the chakras. And so we did freedom statements for each of the lower chakras and the types of freedom statements that they have. And in the seventh chakra, I'm open to my soul's deepest callings that awaken me in every moment to see and experience the infinite gifts I'm being given in this life. So sort of like open to, I'm open to both the material world and the spirit world being two sides of the same fabric. To know one is to know the other. And, you know, that's a brilliant sort of a statement of the seventh chakra, which is the seventh chakra sees, of course, you know, we've chosen at some basic level to have a first chakra, to have our foundation, to be here. But also, you know, there's a purpose, there's a meaning for why we're here, and the seventh chakra carries both. It's able to see the meaning of having a body, and it's also able to teach that body that there's a spiritual purpose in being there. So it's very powerful to have that type of a statement. I'm open to everything being infinitely possible. There has never been a limitation other than what my mind creates. And so being just sort of a recognition that I'm open to everything being possible, but I'm also open to the reality that my mind creates certain limitations just by how it works. I can't see myself flying, and that may be a good thing. That, you know, some of the limitations my mind creates are important for me to recognize that I, you know, there's certain things I will not be jumping off a building to try to fly. And so accepting that we have both limitation, and within that limitation there are infinite possibilities even within our limitations. So the excessive and deficient seventh chakra look like deficient seventh chakra is a person who is sort of blind. Deficient seventh chakra is a closed seventh chakra. That means the person is really sees the world in a very finite, stuck way. It's just the one way. And it could be totally religious. You know, it could be like, this is the way, it's the Jesus, it's the you know, it could be this, or it could be Buddha, or it could be, you know, it's whatever their heart, it's my spiritual guru in India. Whatever that is, it could be like, that's the only way to God. And they will have that hard, you know, that's the only way life works type of belief. Religiously, and then the connection to spirit is a very one way type of a limited tiny little seventh chakra that only can perceive the world through the one mirror. So that's deficient. That'll be a tight, very closed seventh chakra. But then a wide open seventh chakra is sort of the seeker. The I've been trying Buddhism this time, and I've tried, you know, and I'm trying, and I'm reading this, and I'm going to my guru, and I go to psychics every 3 days, and they're constantly, you know, sort of like that. They really use the seventh chakra as an escape hatch. They spend more time in the other worlds. They, you know, they do past life work there. And not that we don't all do all that stuff, by the way, when we're in the program, but teach you how to do it in a very grounded way where you're not losing yourself. It's more, we're bringing this information in for a practical purpose of living your life purpose right now rather than escaping your life purpose by living outside. So the deficient and the excessive seventh chakra really have to do with that connection to guidance, to infinite possibility, to spirit, and it can be very limited. It can be, there is no God, you know, deficient would be, there is no God, I tried that, you know, this church was terrible, or I had a bad nun that hit me, or whatever it was, and it's just like, I don't believe in that anymore, you know, nothing. There's, you know, it's just what you see is what you get, and that's the deficient quality. And the excessive quality is, everything's God, I see God in you, I see God in this, and so there's the pragmatist sort of is the deficient, and the spiritualist is the excessive. And the truth is that it's halfway between the two, as usual. There's got to be a balance in everything. So that's the seventh chakra.
Thank you.
Okay. We're not going deep into the spiritual centers. We're just going to do just give you a sort of a basic understanding of those. So if you have a question about the seventh chakra, let me know, and then we will get started on that. So, Melinda, are there any online questions?
I do have a hand up. I think it's a hand from seventh chakra. I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
You still have a question?
Oh, hello. Yes. I just had a question about the excessive or deficient. Is it possible? Well, of course it's possible to have more in the middle because I can't pick either one. And I was hoping maybe you could give another example of both.
Oh, by the way, yes. And it's important to understand that in some situations you may be excessive in a chakra. And, you know, so, you know, you may have infinite possibility when it comes to your, you know, to what you believe can come out of your meditation practice. And you can be like, oh, I totally, you know, I'm totally excited. I believe, you know, I believe if I pray for, you know, for aliens to arrive, they'll come because I believe, you know, whatever that is, that high sort of like belief, or I believe I have this magical, there can be magical thinking in the excessive seventh chakra. And then you may go to work and you're like, and you'll just walk into work and you'll be like, there's no chance this is ever going to change. And you may be excessive in one area and deficient in another area. And so, you know that it's totally fine to have both in there if you find yourself that way. But there's some people that are just, you know, just think magically all the time, which would be the excessive seventh chakra. You know, magical thinking is a type of thinking where the person has no, you know, rational reason for believing what they believe. They just, and it's just, you know, it's that sort of like, and God will take care of it, and Spirit will take care of it. My guides are always doing everything. You know, whereas, you know, the reality is that the guides need you to help on a lot of those areas. So, you know, so does that answer your questions, Johanna?
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
you.
Oh, you're welcome.